session number 20144, reel 5.
Tom got reel 5.
So I decided, something told me not to go back in that woods again. I'm not a religious man, but someone must have been watching over me. So instead of turning left, I turned right and walked away from it. Now this is against my better judgment, but something, I don't know what happened. I wasn't running away from it, but I just went back in them woods. So I walked back a road. A Scotchman was very conspicuous with his tassel hat on, so I took my tassel off my hat and my prominent badge, put it in my pocket. I had 236 prime mill bombs with me, so I took the detonators out and buried them in the earth. Went back down the road. I didn't know where I was going really, and a vehicle came up the road. It was a landing craft, a duck, what they call a duck landing craft, with one driver. So I thumbed the lift, got aboard. He already said a word to me, and we ended up back in Nijmegen. Now it was getting on. So I knocked on the nearest house with a garage and indicated the woman that came to the door, a middle-aged woman, that I would sleep in the garage. Now, she didn't understand what I was saying. Of course, she was Dutch and I was English. I don't know which was the worst for her understanding. And I made gestures, as we always do, to sleep in a garage. And she turned around and spoke to her husband. He was further back, saying, "Come in, come in." And I said I wanted to stay the night. That was all right, yes, yes. So I took off my equipment. I had a Sten gun with me, so I took the firing pin of the Sten gun, I remember, and put it in my pocket, showing the chap of the house, the man of the house, that I was putting it, and he thoroughly agreed with me, putting this here firing pin in my pocket, immobilising the gun. Now, I was hungry, so I decided to go down and look for the naffy and told them that I'd be back at 8 o'clock, pointing to me watch, 8 or 9 o'clock. And I went down the naffy. All they had to eat was rock buns and tea. So I filled myself up with rock buns and tea. Went back to my friends where I was going to sleep. I put my badge back on, my tassel, because there were Scottish troops about. And she showed me to a first-class bedroom with white sheets. And a beautiful room. And there was me in my dirty uniform with muddy boots, etc., etc. So I said no and indicated that I'd sooner sleep on the sofa down in the front room. But they wouldn't hear of it. So I slept between the sheets, which is a real luxury for me. I slept between the sheets for, months perhaps. Next morning, there was hot water there. I had a nice shave. Didn't shave much, because you must remember I was only 19. So I never had a black beard, but I had the first shave I had for a long time. And I went down the town again. Sat in the naffy, and there was a picture show, free picture show. And the film was Charles Boyer and Ingrid, whatever she was called, Murder in Berkeley Square. It was either that or Fanny by Gaslight. I'm not sure now, after 50 years. But I was to watch this here film six days, or probably 4 or 5 days. I watched the same film to get off the road. And the other film with it was Pluto at the Zoo. And I've seen Pluto at the Zoo quite a number of times since, and it always brings back to my memory. Now, after 2 days, I thought to myself, I'll go back to the battalion and take what was coming with me. I sat on a naffy, eating me rock buns. Someone touched me on the shoulder. And it was a person that I was with that came on the same draft as me back in Normandy with a full corporal. And we chatted about old times, one thing or another. And I said, well, don't tell anybody, I said, but I'm on the trot. That's what they used to call it if you're absent without leave, on the trot. They used to call it joining the Trotters Union. Answered, he said, don't tell anybody, but so are we. So I was not alone. After 4 or 5 days, I can't quite remember exactly this now, they said they were going to Brussels. Now, against my better judgment again, they asked me to join them. So I thought to myself, well, I might as well. The next day, I took 6 rock buns, I remember, back to the place I was staying and gave them to my hosts. And they were quite pleased because food was short. And the next day was Sunday. So they invited me to dinner. And I thought, well, I am hungry, so I accepted their invitation. Come dinner time, they put a great big bowl of boiled potatoes, a bowl of leeks, and a great jug of gravy in the middle of the table. On the plates was 2 big reels of meat. So I ate the most then that I had ate for months. And the lady was joking, making out to put more on my plate. She obviously noticed that I ate a lot. But she was right. After we had the meal, for something to say to the host, I asked the man in mixed language what sort of meat it was. Was it a moon? Or was it a bay? Or was it a grunt? I made the language thing. And he laughed and looked at me and made out to ride a horse. So apparently it was horse flesh. The first time I had tasted horse flesh. But it went down very well. The next day, I got ready and said cheerio to them. I always wish I took their address to write to them and explain after the war, but I never did. And it wasn't times that you was looking to the future. The future was very, very shaky at the time. So we set off up the road. And the woman shed a tear, saying cheerio. As I went up the road, I thought to myself, oh, I offered her some money. Because I had sold one of my watches to a military policeman down in the Naffy. And I was the only one amongst us that had some guilders. I offered her some money, but she wouldn't take. And I hope I never insulted her. But walking up the road, I thought to myself, well, the only thing I'd given them was 6 rock buns. And one of them I'd ate myself. I wish I took their address. But so we went up the road, thumbed a lift, and got a lift on a empty tank transport, to Eindhoven. And this was full of troops, Eindhoven. There's more troops there than up the front. Went in the Naffy. And you can guess what was on the menu. Tea and rock buns. So we filled ourselves up with tea and rock buns. Set off out of town. Knocked on a farmhouse and told the farmer we were going to sleep in the loft amongst the hay over the cows. The cows was down below, so we told the farmer in case he stuck a fork in us in the morning. Breakfast time, the corporal that was with us made a deal with the farmer for breakfast. We had a fried egg on a bit of black bread with a cup of acorn coffee, I suppose it was. Funny, we never had much food, but we never felt hungry, really. We set off down the road, and we must have been suspicious of this farmer, because I'm pretty sure he must have phoned up somebody and told him. Because up the road came a military policeman on a motorbike. So we moved into a barn, an old barn place, and waited there an hour. Moved back on the road, and the military policeman come back the road. And we were really thankful, really, that something had happened. Because I don't know what would have happened if we got back to Brussels. He sent for a truck, and we were duly taken back to Eindhoven. A great big schoolroom of absent without leave personnel, and there was gradually the escorts would come in and pick some up and bring some more in. And the island of this place, which I remember, was in the corner. There must have been about 30 or more in this room. There was a big bucket that everybody used to pee in the night. Didn't smell too sweet. So you could tell the ones that pinned on the longest, it was the ones that slept furthest away from the bucket. After 2 days, my escort arrived. A couple of my mates and the lance corporal, they filled me in with all the details. There was a section, there had been an Irish section in our platoon. They were all gone. Apparently they took shelter under a tree and the shell had hit the trees. They had one action after I'd left them. Took me back to battalion headquarters. And there were 64 of us there, absent without leave. 64. This is a sad part of this tale, but it got to be told with the other. And there were so many of us that the headquarter company couldn't feed us. So every mealtime, an escort arrived from our own company and took us back to our own company lines for feeding to our meals. And they were back to Tilburg again, by the way, for a rest. And we had three tents in a coal yard, the absent without leave. And everything was black. And they used to take us for a meal back to the company. And of course, all our mates was there, and they used to, all my comrades, I mean, this camaraderie in the section during the war was terrific. Terrific, this camaraderie in the section. A section is normally 10 men, but it was generally down to 6 and that sort of thing. And used to see us all for cigarettes. They used to give us packets of cigarettes that we used to put down the legs of our trousers to hide from the Provo policeman, the police sergeant. Then the battalion moved again, and we went back to a place called Selder in Belgium, where we were reinforced by all raw recruits. They're all 18-year-old boys. They'd just done their primary training and sent out to us. I went in front of the company commander with about five of us. And I explained to him about the wood part. And he reminded me, he had to remind me for COs or the company commanding officers. I went up to the company the COs, defaulters prey, got charged. And the CO, Remington Hobbs, the CO was called. Remington Hobbs. He had only just joined the battalion. And he read the riot act to me, told me I've been a bad boy and all that business. And he said, I'll leave this to your company commander. And funny enough, the company commander was away, and there was a temporary company commander. It was Major McNeil, who later took over from the company. And he in turn said, I don't know much about this man, this rifleman myself, but I've spoken to his platoon commander, and he gives him a glowing character and said how unlike me it was, because I'd done so well in previous actions, to take this action. Remington Alves looked at me and said, there you are. He said, you can do it. He said, don't come again. He said, do you accept my punishment? And I said, yes, sir. 28 days. Now, 28 days for punishment. We were in the barn, and the punishment was to go to the cookhouse every day and clean all the pots and pans. Used to go there in the morning and stir the porridge and dish out, make a tea, then wash up all the dirty Dixies, and then the cooks would dirt them again for the midday meal. Then you wash them again, and then they dirt them again for the evening meal. That was the punishment. But we only stayed 5 days. And I was kitted out again with me rifle and 60 rounds of ammunition, 2 hand grenades. And all the platoon was full up with all youngsters then. I was an old one at 19 and 19 and a half. These were all young boys. We set off in troop transports. We ended up in a woods this side of the River Rhine. That obviously was the next big object of the River Rhine. We dug in, just a sleeping trench covered with our faithful gas capes. The officers went for all groups and the sergeant went for all groups and explained our position. They give us a yellow silk diamond to put on our trenches too, so that our airplanes or planes would know where the troops was, and all the tanks and everything that went in had these yellow diamonds. In the night, early in the morning, there was a terrific display of fireworks just in front of us. They had Beauforts firing across and artillery was firing. And this was the first assault on the River Rhine. There were 3 brigades in our division. 4/6 Brigade had been the first in the Siegfried Line. So we were what they called a reserve brigade. Now, it sounds good, the reserve brigade, but it's not always the best place to be, because the reserve brigade gets pushed in where the opposition is heaviest. If a battalion hits trouble and they want an extra battalion there, that's the reserve brigade comes in for that, see, with the 3 battalions. We dug in just off the River Rhine. We had 24-hour packs of food, which contained porridge and block of porridge you're supposed to make, and tea and boiled sweets. But you could never make it because you never had enough water. Once you made your tea, that was it. So we had to, used to eat the porridge raw. And there was something called, I should think it was oxtail soup or something we used to eat. We made brewed tea in it, or blocks of porridge. Come the dawn, then 3 divisions of glider of airborne troops flew overhead. A sight I should think it hard to see again. And up there was the 12th Devons that I've been in, and many of my comrades that I trained with. I was virtually up there with them. Me and Corporal Grant, he had been with me. Sergeant Major Mashford was up there. He was to lose his life across the Rhine, with a lot of them that only had a one-way ticket. The gliders cast off, the 6th Airborne Division's gliders cast off just across the river, and the 2 Yankee divisions went further down the river where the Yanks had crossed. Now the gliders went on out of sight. Everything was full of smoke. There had been a terrific smoke screen put up. The gliders went away, but the Dakotas, the tow planes, were very slow in turning. And a terrific lot of them got shot down. We watched them coming down and counting the crew that come out. I think there's 4 used to come out. on their parachutes. And sometimes there'd only be one or two coming out. Shortly after this, it was our time to cross. So we went down the river's edge and got into these assault boats. They were like small wooden boats with a putt-putt engine on the back. Or could have been canvas boats, I don't know now. But there was a Canadian with a... And he never said a word. He had been across too many times, I suppose. And we got in and I undone my equipment, unlaced my boots. The idea being that if you got tipped out, you had more chance to swim. I suppose I must have been the only one that done this. This is what we got learned at battle school when I was in the demonstration platoon. So I'd learned something at the battle school and several things more that I reckon must have saved me life in times to come. We crossed the river and they started digging already to put the bridge across, the engineers. And there was five dead engineers laid out there with blankets over them. You could see they weren't infantrymen because they had gas capes over them with their boots sticking at the bottom. And one of the new boys said to me, he was up from North Country, he said, are they sleeping? And I didn't want to disillusion him because I knew that would come quick enough. I said, yes, but they're all dead. We went up the bank, over the top of the flood bank, and there was three shallow graves facing us on the corner of a minefield. They had their rifles stuck upside down. Two of them had steel helmets on, and one of them had a Scottish bonnet with a Glasgow Islander badge in. And there was a cleared path around the edge of the minefield. All their equipment was laying about, the inevitables, their tin mugs and their mess tins and everything had been turned out of their packs and the rifle bullets. And it was all there. This is what used to happen. You always find a lot of equipment that had been abandoned. And you could imagine yourself there, really, or I could. But we started off around the path, around the mines, and all of a sudden a shell fell right in front of us, up the path. We all stopped again, and you can guess who came to our rescue? Sergeant Rose again. Get yourself spread out or you all get fucking killed, he said. And he walked on, and we all followed him. And we got past the shelling, but the platoons that come after us weren't so lucky. They had the range of the path, I suppose, Jerry. Whether it was more, I should think it was mortar shells, I don't know. We got out of the minefield, spread out, started crossing to contact. We got to a farmhouse, and all of a sudden, a pig run out of there with a great lump out of his side. He had obviously been caught in the shelling. And he was running around in circles, barking like a, more or less like a dog, not by way, but grunting. So I aimed at him and put him out of his misery with my third shot. And one of these new boys, the new boy's one comrade yet, I mean, that comes a little bit later when everybody's coming. He said to me, the cruel bugger. And I turned on him and I said, you'll be the next if you don't shut your bloody mouth. Or words to that effect. And after the war, he often used to bring this up to me. And we used to have a good laugh about it. We went to the farmers and there was the family, the farm family. Two kids and the mother and father with their hands up in the air, surrendering. We made them put their hands down. And like the kids, a bottle of sweet each. Now, why, I don't know. It's just, you just make up your mind to do these things in battle. We moved on, dug in against the wall of another farmer's, and we were being fired on. The bullets was hitting the wall above us, so we kept our heads down. And around the corner, All of a sudden came the RSM, stood up in a Bren gun carrier, coming around the corner. So I shouted at him and said, I said, incoming fire! And he popped his head down and dashed back the road. I sort of enjoyed this because it's different in the battlefield than on the parade ground. As it got dark, we moved off. We went back a bit and up a road on an embankment. We were sitting targets and all of a sudden they fired on us. Three of our platoon dropped down. And we moved on to into the ditch at the start of the road where we should have been in the beginning. But it was up our knees in mud and whatever it was. And one of these men was Rifleman Baker, one of them that telling jokes back in Nijmegen. Just moaning. So we pulled him to the driest part of the ditch and stretcher bearers come up and took him, squelched away with him. There was a lot of tracer bullets flying about. He went further up the ditch and came to this farmhouse that was apparently our objective. A company was going to form the basis for the rest of the battalion to move through and attack. Some section stayed where there was and dug in on the embankment. The rest of the platoon went around the other side of the house and some across in the orchard. And they started shelling further back, the road further back. There was two tanks out back or two in the ditch knocked out, two Turtle tanks at the previous battle. And they kept shelling this road. So we were virtually cut off. We stayed there a day and a night. The next day it quietened down. And there was a tap in the farmhouse. So Corporal Grant went over for a shave. We used to keep up that custom with his water about and to fill up his water bottle. And it must have been 3-inch mortars, I should think. They gave us a real plastering. And my rifle was on top of the trench and it got blown across the road. Well, after the shelling, I stayed in the trench on my own and made yourself as small as you can, instinct. Steel helmet down, neck in, cringing the side of the trench and saying that inevitable prayer. A very short one, oh God. The shelling stopped and Corporal Grant come back and jumped in the trench and he sat on a lump of shrapnel. Good job he hadn't been sitting there because that was his place. And I went over for a shave. And there was a cellar in the farm and it was filling up with casualties. I never went down there, but it must have been out of a mess down there. We stayed for 2 or 3 nights there and the first aid jeep couldn't get to us to evacuate the casualties. So they was gradually filling up and other companies that attacked through us, their wounded was coming back and all going down the cellar. So God knows what it must have been like down there. The next morning, there must have been about 20 Germans up the road, the next night, the other companies must have outflanked them and they pushed them onto us, these Germans, and they come in and give themselves up. So we put them in the barn and for the night. And we had a lot of casualties coming through us from the other companies that had a very, very sticky time out in front of us. In particular, B Company, I think. They started off, I got the channel, 116 they started with. And they finished with 37, I think it was. But we stayed the night there. Then we moved back. And some section,